Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Save big money on your next project, now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELDWIN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELDWIN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Omar Rizza. How you doing, Omar?
I'm good, thank you. Very good.
Good stuff, good stuff. Omar, just before we get into the thick of it, maybe just give a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so Omar Rizza, you know, been around a while now. I'm getting old, 43 years old. So been a professional footballer up to the age of about 35 when I retired. And then, started at Arsenal, went to West Ham and went abroad, played in Turkey for 6 years. Come back, played in League One, League Two, and then started my coaching journey probably when I was player coach for Histon. So Dave Livermore was a friend of mine. He was manager and started coaching there, really. And then over the last 10, 11, 12 years, I've been coaching now and, you know, got to pro license level and working hard to get to where we're all trying to get to.
Awesome. I'm going to take you right back to the start of it because there's a lot in there and it's probably spanning over a good 15, 20 years, really. You know, you've done really well to kind of capture that in about 20 seconds. So let's go right to the start of it. Where did you first get involved with the game? And what was that like in terms of, obviously, you mentioned that you obviously played at Arsenal at a young age, coming through the academy there. What was that like?
You know, my playing started at about, still quite young, really, but not as young as what people are going now. I started at about 8, 9, I think, 7, 8, 8, 9, something like that. And I was really into martial arts when I was a young boy. So from the age of, must have been about 5, 6, I was doing karate, sort of got to black belt at the age of 12. And I was really interested in martial arts. And then football sort of sprung up and it was more, my dad used to play and I was really, had a lot of energy and he used to take me over the park with a ball to go and run around the trees and stuff like that, just to burn off some energy, just to get me out of my mum's hair, I think. And it just started from there. It went from school, was playing. I was really quick. I think people clocked onto the fact that I was just like so quick. I started to play for the school. And then from the school, obviously, you know, you've got parents who have got kids who are in Sunday clubs. And then they say, oh, let's get O there, or let's have a look at him there. And I was just like so far off it in respect of understanding of the game. I think with my first game, people tell me my first game, they put me on the pitch and I started running towards my own goal to score in my own goal. Just love playing it, really. Love both martial arts and football. And it got to a point where the love for football become stronger. And I decided to go down that path.
Definitely. Obviously, you mentioned there, you know, the top of the conversation around how you've moved into coaching. And I'll come back to that in a second. But really key thing I want to talk about just there, what you've mentioned there is, you started off in martial arts. You obviously transitioned over to football. On reflection now, how much of an impact, or if at all any, do you think that martial arts had on your ability to play football or any transferable things in regards to that?
I'm not sure if it had any sort of impact because I know we always talk about the fact that giving kids the multi-sports to help them in, you know, in their football or whatever they decide to choose. But I think, I mean, I suppose the martial arts to a certain extent was to, you know, tame you know, my energy and stuff like that. And I suppose I took that energy and aggression and tenacity into my football. If I look at traits that I had in football, I suppose it was that, you know, energy, like I said, tenacity, aggression. I had those key traits, I think, that help you become a footballer for sure. Did it come from being in martial arts? I don't know. There might have been elements of that that's helped me, but I just think you've got that sort of stuff in you, or you haven't.
Obviously, you mentioned that, you know, you're not too sure whether there was any kind of transferable things or what impact it may or not have had. But I've got a feeling the way in which you addressed the question to start with, you're not fully sold on the idea of multi-sports. Would that be fair?
No, I'm not sold on it. I just think, listen, if you're fortunate enough to go and play in different sports and stuff like that and have a go at it, great. I don't think it needs to be put in place to help you become a football player. If you're doing it and it's, you know, I always say that people become what they're going to become because of what they've been exposed to. Like whatever that is, whether that's sport, whether that's, you know, a banker or whatever it is. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and it was, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was definitely, you know, there is an element of, I do firmly believe that whatever you get exposed to in your life helps you to become what you're going to become, whether that's something that bad that's happened in your life, which pushes you on to become, or, you know, or whatever. I do believe that, but in sport, multi-sport, does it help? I'm not sure. I'm not sold on the idea, no.
Would you say it's much more about the environment that's been created than the sport itself then?
Yeah, I would say obviously things have definitely improved in respect of what we're doing for players now to help them get to becoming a football player. Obviously things are become a lot more difficult now because the sport is just so big and there's so much money involved in it. And it's a worldwide thing where we're bringing players from abroad and all those things. So it's become harder for players to break through. But yeah, definitely what you're exposed to it will help you. But put that aside, the other thing with that is that I believe that giving them too much doesn't help them as well. It hinders them. So we've got to get that balance between letting them know, and that's what comes from within as well. Do you know what it takes to become a professional footballer? Yes, all the stuff that we provide for you and all the things that we're asking you to do, great. But have you got that application? Have you got that mental attitude? Have you got that focus to be a player day in, day out? Because we get 16s coming as new scholars and they really find out what it's like to be a professional footballer. And I think you should give those players that opportunity to do that, because full-time football is a totally different beast.
Definitely. And I was going to take you back to the start of what you said there. It's almost that there's so much available for them now. There's so much work that's going into preparing these young players into becoming footballers. You think we're in danger of maybe there being too much right now?
I think the game is flooded with players. I think we've got academies on academies on academies. If it's not professionals academy, it's another academy. If it's not an academy, it's it's 1v1 football. If it's not 1v1 or one-on-one training sessions, it's something else. If it's not training sessions, it's like doing S&C work outside of football. If it's not that, it's just ridiculous now. I mean, when we were playing, I don't like to talk about when we were playing and what I used to play Saturday. I used to play Sunday. I used to play Sunday afternoon for different clubs because they wanted you. Was it right? Was it too much? Probably. But now we're the other way. Now we give them everything else and we say they can't play any football. You know, it's like, well, oh no, you've done your high speed running this week. You've done your 30K this week. You can't do any more. So do players really know what it's like to push themselves? It's something I sort of argue about all the time. Not argue, but sort of like, I think that's what we're lacking in the game again. I've been suggesting that we take away GPS for a week, 2 weeks in the month. Take it away totally. Let's see how we deal with just having a go. So you don't know what you're doing. So you don't know what numbers you're doing. You don't know what high speed. It doesn't matter. Let's just see how you feel. You know, so yeah, I think it's gone too far the other way, probably, if I'm being honest.
Definitely. So let's come back to your journey. Obviously, you started as a young player. You mentioned there, obviously, starting in martial arts, transition over to football. Where did Arsenal come about? How did that happen?
So, obviously, when I was playing football, I playing for the school, playing for the district, playing for the county. I went into Orient actually, and I went there for 10 weeks when I was about 9, and they said, oh, you're as good as what we got, but you're not better, and sort of they let me go. And then obviously that was a downer. I felt really bad about that as a kid, and then went back into grassroots, played again, was doing well, and then went into Watford, and that was brief, and that was like a couple of weeks trialing, 3-4 weeks trialing, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it was. And they had all big, strong, powerful players, so I didn't fit into their mould. I went back to grassroots again, and then I was playing for a club called Chase Side, where I was with for a few years, and Edmonton Rangers, then Chase Side, and then there was a my scout who was called Bill Hollandale, and he had scouted a few, me, Paolo Venazza, Greg Lincoln, Andrew Douglas at the time, and Dave Livermore. And I went in from there, had some trials, played against some teams, and I never looked back, really. I went in at the age of, I think, 10 or 11. I was there till I was 20. So, yeah.
And obviously, you were there at a time where there was massive changes. Obviously, you know, Wenger had not come in too long before that. I think 3-4 years probably, you know, by the time you'd left Arsenal. What were the major changes you saw there during that period there? And what was it like to be around the environment in that time where there was so much change and all these big names coming in as well?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me this question, and I think the changes were so like progressive. It sort of like just happened quite naturally. But obviously the obvious change was, you know, players weren't drinking. I mean, we were still quite young when he first came in. I was only like 17, I think, when he first came into the club. Players weren't drinking now, you know, after games like the Tony Adamses and the Ian Wrights and the, you know, Paul Mersons. They probably were still, but, you know, not as much. You know, we were getting vitamins and tablets. I remember being in squads and there'd be tablets on the table, vitamin tablets. Like they were like the size of a flipping horse pill, they looked like. The big now they're a lot smaller. Now we were trying to swallow those things. It was like swallowing a flipping candlestick. But so, yeah, there was things like that, you know, looking after your body. And then in regards to the training, you know, he was quite a different sort of character. It was, you know, he let Pat Rice do all the coaching, and he would sort of step in and talk to individuals about small detail, you know, he has changed the face of football, Arsene Wenger, no shadow of a doubt, from his time of coming in at Arsenal and England through to now, and probably what he's doing at FIFA now. And he's just very innovative. I think he's just a very innovative person, you know.
During that time, then, you know, did you have any interactions with him that have kind of stayed with you now up until this point?
Like I said, I think things like that, in respect of the coaching habits, you know, sometimes I think I'm getting better at it now. I'm getting a little bit older, where I can sort of just pull people aside and give them those little real nuggets of information, rather than give them it all. I think things like that. He was always had a good demeanour, you know, he was relaxed most of the time, unless he was playing up against Mourinho or someone like that, when he sort of changed. I learned a lot of all the coaches that I've worked with.
Just building on that, then, you know, obviously there in the initial periods, I think they might have even won the first season going pro, is it?
I can't hear you, Latif, sorry.
I was just saying, just obviously during that time that you were there, can you hear me now?
Yeah, go on. Yep.
During that time that you're there, obviously, I think they were coming towards one of their first league wins under Wenger at the time. What was that? What was that period like? Obviously, you know, that transition, and obviously, you know, where did that time? What brought that time at Arsenal to an end for you?
You know, that period was a really good period. You know, like back then he was bringing in players, like he brought in a lot of players. You know, Nicola Anelka, Alberto Mendes, Chris Ray, Cabo Diawara, Remy Gard, Jules Grimondi, and the list goes on, Vieira. He still was fortunate that he had players like Ian Wright, Tony Adams, Steve Bould, Lee Dixon, Nigel Winterburn, who were probably like the best back four in the country, in Europe, you could say, even at that stage. He was fortunate that he was able to have a solid structure alongside players that he could filter in that weren't quite ready, like Anelka, like Vieira, who wasn't really ready. He was only 20, I think, when he brought him in, 21. He got it right, and he was clever about how he did it. He didn't do changes really quickly, but did enough, like, to make sure that he had the old players there that were that had lots of experience, like Paul Merson as well, and players like that. And then adding those Freddie Ljungbergs and those Petits and those Jules Grimondis and all those players to the mix, Silvino. I can go on, like the players that he brought in. Now I'm thinking about it, it was just like players he brought in were brilliant. And then, so we done the double, first team done the double that year. And our youth team, we won. So we beat Ajax in Europe. We won the European tournament we went to. We won the Premier Youth League that year. We won the, and we lost to Leeds in the semi-final of the FA Youth Cup, which really we should have gone on to win, but we let ourselves down there. So we had a really good season as well. And, you know, players that have come out of our youth team was like, you know, Paolo Venazza, Dave Livermore, Tommy Black, Julian Gray, myself, Ashley Cole, Stuart Taylor. We had an abundance of players, Greg Lincoln, Andrew Doug, come out of that group, who all went on to have really good careers. For me, it got to the point where I was in and around the first team, you know, and obviously we had great players there. It was hard to break into that team, so I'd done well to get around it. But I felt that there was other sort of issues around other players that were, I was being a little bit unfairly treated, I felt, when I should have been given more opportunity. There were some players in the building that were given the opportunity in front of me that had come in from staff at the club that had a strong hold on what was going on. So it was time for me to move on. I got offered the new contract, I rejected it, and I moved to West Ham. And it was with a heavy heart because I'd been there for 10 years. But, that's how it goes sometimes.
Obviously, you know, you're right. That is how it goes sometimes. It must have been a real challenge for you, obviously, moving from an environment. Like you said, you've been there for the best part of a decade, moving to a new environment. What was that like? You know, what was going through your mind at the time, having to leave at that time? Obviously, given the circumstances that you're under, but just having to actually now try and fit into a new organisation, new club, new staff, probably a completely different way of playing at the time, and still being a young player, not really real guarantees of what that's going to, you know, bring for you.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting point, actually, because I could have gone... See, in my head, I was like... I was in around the first team squad at Arsenal and I wanted to stay around the Premier League at, like, 19. And I could have gone to either Portsmouth, I could have gone Gillingham. Portsmouth wanted to buy me for big money from Arsenal, and I didn't go. And I went to West Ham and I was doing really well. You know, I decided to go. I signed a three-year deal there. And our squad was amazing. You know, the squad we had, you know, at the time, again, I can, you know, Joe Cole, Rio Ferdinand, Frank Lampard, Di Canio, Michael Carrick. The strongest West Ham squad that probably there's been for a long time, all England internationals. So I was in good company. You know, I was training with those players. I was in the squads most weeks. And it was difficult, you know, but I wanted to push myself. I wanted to stay where I was. And but it got to a point where I was getting frustrated. You know, I think Redknapp left. Glenn Roeder came in, who's passed away now, sadly. And I was flying at the time. And I went to St Mirren. And everything was sorted there to go and sign at St Mirren. And Glenn Roeder didn't let me go and said, look, you've been doing really well. I want you around the squad. So I stayed again. And I waited till the end of the season. And then I moved. And I ended up moving to Cambridge, who I'd went to on loan. So I'd played in League One at Cambridge on loan. And then that following year, I went and played for them. And I had a season with them. And I think I scored about 18 goals. 18, 19, I think it was that season. And I wasn't happy with the football. You know, League One, League Two is not great. It wasn't great. And an opportunity come up to go abroad. And I went.
So let's just talk about that a little for a second. There's a lot that you've kind of gone into there. Obviously, going to the club. What was it, obviously you mentioned there about wanting to be around the Premier League. What was it in particular about West Ham that was it literally just a draw of the Premier League that kept you wanting to be there? Or was it a case of actually they had a better package for you, or you know,
a bit of everything, you know. I think it was I played a game, I think we played at Highbury and Frank Lampard Senior was there. We played West Ham, we beat them 4-2 and I played really well. I scored a couple of goals and he really liked me. So, you know, when someone likes you, an assistant manager at the club, you know, and you go in there and they had good young players at the time as well. It was in London still. So West Ham was down the road from where I was in Edmonton at the time. So it wasn't a hard journey to get to Chadwell Heath. That was attractive. It was West Ham. It was a Premier League club. Former players had gone there, like Wrighty had gone there. John Artson had gone there from Arsenal. And I think Davor Šuka. I think the problem I had, I went there and then Davor Šuka came there. He was like following me all over the place, like a bad smell. And that caused me a problem, you know. And but yeah, it was a good squad. And I was playing against players like, you know, before I went there, you know, Joe Cole, Frank Lampard, Rio Ferdinand, to go there and be training and be in that company and know it was going to push me to progress. It was, you know, it was a no brainer really for me. I finished top goal scorer every year in the reserves. I just needed that opportunity. I don't know why it didn't come. I should have had more opportunity than I did at both clubs.
Yeah.
But you know, that's it.
There's a lot of things that you've touched on, and I want to kind of unpack. So just let's stay on this topic for a second. And you know, you've gone to West Ham. Obviously, your coach now. We'll get onto that part later. But I want to think now, in retrospect, what were the types of things that you were looking at as a young player at that time? And maybe what would be the advice to young players in the conversation you have with young players now who are in a similar position? Like, what are you asking them to consider when making a move like this?
I mean, things have changed a lot. You know, we as young players, we got taught how to play the game, but only because of the qualities that we had. You know, I was super quick. I like to get beyond defences. And that's what I was used for. You know, now we teach the players a whole range of things. Whether they're good at it or not, we teach them it.
We're in danger now, because this is often a debate I'm having with a lot of coaches around the idea of we're losing specialists. And now there seems to be this kind of, let's create a whole bunch of jack of all trades.
Yeah, it's a valid point. I mean, I still think that listen, if someone's a good player and he's good at certain things, you will focus on those points. So we got players who are players are number nine. He's got the right profile to play as number nine. He does certain things, calm on the ball, brings people into play, is a fox in the box, can finish. So you give them those. But I still think that we, you know, tactically, I'm not on about individual. Individual's different because we do ILP stuff and we do focus stuff for players for what they're good at. But tactically, we are teaching players a whole new ball game now. And, you know, I know a lot of people always say, you know, the game hasn't changed. The game, you know, everyone's trying to reinvent the wheel with the game. I think it has evolved. It's evolved, definitely. Tactically, the game's evolved massively. And I think coaches who don't see that and don't understand that, then, you know, they need to go back and re-educate themselves because it has changed from when I was playing and to what it is now. So coming back to your question, I think what would I say about, yeah, I think players now in the championship, which we're in, Premier League's a little bit different. You know, when you've got Premier League players that are in the top six clubs, they can go to League Two, League One, Championship, because they'll take them. Our clubs, they don't really take the players in League One, League Two as much. So my advice is, you know, you've got to go get experience, whether it's Conference, whether it's Conference South, whether it's Ryman Prem. Experience is experience. And if it's about regarding a move, I would say, if you come out of an academy now at 21, I wouldn't, or let's say 18, I wouldn't be advising, unless someone wants you and you've moved because you're doing really well, that's a different story. I wouldn't advise any kid to go back into an academy. I'd be saying, go and get yourself into a team, non-league, go and get yourself playing, go and rack up 50 appearances, 100 appearances, because we can't even get our players out to those clubs. So go and get yourself in there, go and play and develop from there. That'd be my advice.
Just on that then, what is the challenge in trying to get your players out to those clubs? Because obviously, you know, a lot's changed in the last 10, 15 years, especially with the ECCC coming in, you know, the passing away of the whole reserve team set up and things like that, and they've got now extended it to the PDP up into under 23s now.
I think
some of those experiences that you're talking about, the young players going to get, you probably would have got some of that, at least part of that, in the reserve team kind of setup.
I think we missed that now. I say that on a regular basis as well, is that I think we missed that, like the combination league or the reserves, whatever it was back then, that element of playing with first team players, playing against first team players. I can remember clearly playing against West Ham, actually, and I was playing against Julian Dix, I was playing against Steve Potts, I was playing against John Moncur, who were playing in at the back and in midfield, and I was playing against them, you know, and I had some senior players playing with me, and it was, that's proper learning, you know, you're learning from senior players rather than you're trying to learn from your peers who are your age around you. It ain't the same. So I think we do lack that now, and I think there is a certain element of, yeah, with the Cat 1 teams, they're playing the Papa Johns and stuff like that, so they're trying to recreate that, but it's only in competition, it ain't every game, you know, so that's, at least they're trying. But I would say the reason for it is that I think the level has gone up, level of football has gone up, and I think that players aren't as good as what they used to be. That's my honest opinion. I think we've got so many players now that are in the system, and you need to bring players, you need to have players in this system, 21s, 18s, whatever it might be, and they're not good enough. So that's why they can't play at those levels.
Why do you think that is? Because I think you're spot on. I think the game is definitely, the standard of the game across the board, whether here or abroad or wherever, just as a general thing, has definitely raced. You know, we come back full circle to the top of the conversation around the sports science and all of that sort of stuff that's come into it. It's definitely, I think, pushed the game to a point where you're getting much more well-rounded athletes, possibly. Maybe not specifically well-rounded footballers, but definitely athletes as performers, if you like. Why do you think the standard of the playing has dropped, though? Or it maybe hasn't caught up with it as much as it should have, maybe?
I think it's dropped, one, because they're not competing with players to make them better. I think they're competing with their own age for too long. Two, I think we've got so many players. Like, when, again, before it was, you get to 18, if you can't get in the reserves, then you basically got to go. And you'll end up going and playing at a lower league. Now, you can stay in the system till you're, you know, 22, 23, get rich as well by then, and not even have an appearance. So, again, there's loads of things that need to be better. But we can list the amount of the reasons why. It's about changing them, really. But, yeah, I think there's so many players in the system now that ain't good enough. But we've got them because we... You know, you've got to fulfill a certain criteria. And they think they are good enough and they're not. You know, I have this conversation with players all the time, and sometimes you've got to give them a wake-up call.
So, no, I think that's really interesting. It's obviously, you know, what we definitely have seen over the last few years, and I think there's a lot more competition now for clubs to be getting players, hence why we've seen, you know, the academies get longer in terms of the journey that could look like, but also... the extended provision in terms of development centres and advanced centres and all of this stuff, where it all becomes like a recruitment tool, if you like. At what point do you then turn around and say, actually, let's do what Brentford did. Let's streamline what we're doing. Go and own in on a group of players in particular. Don't worry about the whole spectrum. And then say, right, actually, let's just work on these individuals here. Because you're talking there about the quality of football is not being as great. You also mentioned previously when you was at Arsenal that the standard of the group that you was in was quite high, and rightly so. What, you know, you made another very, very good point as well, that, you know, at 18, if you're not good enough to go into the first team or the reserve team at that point, it's you're out the door. So are we giving them too many chances now? Do you think it is?
I've always said that we need to give players more time, but it's what time you're giving them. I think that's important. You know, I think we're giving players time, but we are not doing enough, or they're not doing enough to be able to push themselves to the next level. I don't believe going a B team is, I think having a B team is a good thing, but alongside doing everything else that you're doing. So you have got that competitive playing against men environment. I think that is what we lack. I don't think not having an academy. I think every club should have an academy. I think they should provide that service. I think kids should come and love and enjoy the game. in academy football. But it's just about getting that balance right and getting it right for the players. I'm a bit, you know, on one hand, I'm like, we need to give players time. And on the other hand, I'm like, it's important what time we give them. Because if you just give them time for time's sake, then you end up with what we've got. But then you can't question the fact of what we're creating, you know, what academies are doing now and what players are coming through. I mean, you can see that in the England squad, you know, they're superb players, superb technical individuals. And so we're getting it right. We are getting it right. But I think we're a lot of failing along the way as well. And that's the that's the issue with it for me.
What about from a coaching perspective? Do you think the coaching, general standard of coaching has dropped? Do you think that there's not enough quality across the board?
I'm not sure. I mean, has it dropped? I haven't seen enough to be able to say. I mean, the environment I'm in is like I'd like to think it's an elite environment. I've worked in England for the last 4 years.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
I've been working with Watford in the 2023s for the last 4 or 5 years. I'd like to think it's at a very high level. England definitely is, you know, and I'd like to say that at Watford we are as well. Has it dropped? I'm not sure, Latif, if I'm honest with you. I couldn't answer that question. I'd like to think it hasn't, with all the educational tools that are in place now with the FA and, you know, all the courses that are on. I mean, I've definitely learned from every course I've been on, whether it's been from UEFA B all the way through to the pro license. I've learned every single step of the way. Anyone who says they hasn't is just ignorant then, or just thinks they're a waste of time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question more comes from the perspective of, you know, you talk about the coach education pathway. I think the courses have definitely developed over the last, you know, few years. But I think the challenge that people have always put out regarding them is, are they letting people get put signed off too easily, maybe?
That's a different story. I mean, you could say over the COVID period, there wasn't a lot of coaching going on, and there wasn't a lot of face-to-face stuff going on. So what was people's real learning there? That could be a valid point. Are they signing people off too easy? I don't know. I mean, that's you've got to ask the tutors, you've got to ask the FA that, you've got to ask people that have passed their, you know, their licenses, how they felt about it. Did they take anything from it or not? I think the only way you really take anything from coaching is if you're on the grass every day practicing, if I'm being honest.
100%. I don't think anything can replace the time on grass. So no. Let's come back to your journey as a player. You know, you talk, obviously, Glenn Rhodes told you that you're doing really well. He wants you to stick around. What happens then? You know, what does that conversation look like in terms of, does that come with any promises around what you're expected to, you know, be involved in going forward? Because obviously, you know, we've recently had this massive controversy around Cristiano Ronaldo as an example, where it seems as if the plan was one thing at the start and then the plan has then changed, but maybe there was a lack of communication around what that looks like. What was that like for you?
you know, if I look back over the course of my career, my father has represented me for most of my life, alongside people who have maybe helped with deals. I think that was a big issue. You know, I remember Glenn wanted me to stay at the club, and he was like, you know, I want to give you an extra another 2 years, but it'd have to be with an agency that, you know, that I recommend. But that didn't happen because I weren't going to, you know, walk away from my father at the time, because my father's always done everything for me. So I may have had issues like that in the past, political, if you like, if you want to call it that. So that was the score with that. I stayed around. I stayed till the end of the season, and I didn't do that. I didn't sign a new deal. I didn't go with another agent, and I moved on. And that was where we're at with that, really.
Any regrets around that? Obviously, you know, you got your ties. Obviously, it's your dad, but do you reflect back on that and think, you know, maybe in some cases it's maybe not best to have family members doing that sort of work for you?
Yeah, I think looking back in hindsight, you know, being a lot more, you think I was a young kid. I was like, then I was, I think, 20 years old, 20 or 21. You don't understand those things too much. And if it was now, you know, I would be, you know, well, tell me, who do I need to talk to in order to get this deal done? You know, let's have an open conversation about it, rather than it be, you know, well, what's the problem with my dad? Why don't you like my dad? When maybe it's not about that, and it's about, well, you know, if you're with him, maybe he will be with me, and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's how your circle gets bigger. So, yeah, learning things along the way. I learned a lot along the way. Is it right? No. Is it the game? Possibly. I try to veer away from those sorts of things. I always try to give my players clear and precise information. You know, I always, every player I've worked with from the last 10, 12 years will call me and talk to me and ask me and trust in me, barring one or two maybe who I've upset along the way because I've been honest with them and they haven't liked it, which is fine. I've always said that to them. I said, I might say something to you one day that you don't like, and you might get offended, but everything I always say to you is for your best interests at heart. If you don't like the truth, then don't ask me, because that's what you're going to get from me. And I've had good relationships with every player I've worked with as a player and who I worked with as a coach. And that's how I am. And that's how I want to be.
And I think something that kind of just really jumps out at me as you say that it's much more about the trust and honesty piece rather than anything else. You know, I say it to people all the time, especially when I'm working with coaches as a coach developer. I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to help you become a better coach. So, like you said, there's going to be things I say that you won't like, and chances are you probably won't like them because no one else has ever told you them before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But as long as we understand that my job here is to help you become a better coach, and that's the thing that I get judged on.
So, yeah.
You know, if you win, I win. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
So now I think that's spot on. So, you know, just, you know, you've obviously moved over to Cambridge. And then you obviously moved abroad, gone to Turkey for a few years. What was that like?
So I played in Turkey for 6 years. You know, I played 3 years at Denizlispor, who was Super League, and we finished fourth twice, which was great for the club. And then I moved to Trabzon, which was like a big club in the country, a top four club. And it's a great country, you know, great players, very good players out there. Turkish players, technically very good. And then when I was out there, obviously Nick Anelka came out there. So I was playing against Nick out there. When he was at Fenerbahce, I was playing against Songy, who was at Galatasaray, who then came to Trabzon. Roberto Carlos come out there. Like, so many big, big players come out there. Lugano was playing against, like, week in, week out. Top, top world-class players coming out there to play. So, for me, it was good, you know, managed to get around the national team, had a good career. And then I come back in 2009, I think it was. And then, yeah, continued with my career.
So you went, come back in 2009, Shrewsbury Town, right?
Yeah.
So you're now veering towards, let's say, maybe the back end of your career. When does coaching start to become a thing for you? I know that you mentioned you started getting involved in coaching at Histon. Was it ever a consideration before that?
You know, what's funny is that you say it was coming towards the end. When I come back to when I came back to Shrewsbury, I was 30 years old. I was still in good nick, but I'd had a ban. I'd banned for a year because of some problems I had in Turkey with the club. They banned me. I had a global ban. I couldn't play. I didn't play for a year, which I lost some form because of that. I was having to try and tick over myself. Went to Shrewsbury and tried to find myself again. And it was, I struggled, you know, not through lack of trying, through lack of being given the opportunity to play. You know, when you've been banned like that, you need to play to get your, to find your feet again. And I was in and out, and I just got frustrated at the end. I thought, you know, I've been playing in Europe. I've been playing in the European Cup for the last 2-3 years. I've been playing at Trabzonspor, big club, playing against big players. And now I'm back in League Two playing for Shrewsbury, and I can't even get in the team. So there was an element of, you know, what am I doing? You know, where is this all leading to? Frustration, anger at what had happened out there. And that's been a long ongoing case for like 10 years with the European Court of Human Rights, which I won. So that's caused a big problem. But since then, come back. Yeah. And then, like you say, was there any fault? No. When I was at Shrewsbury, the UEFA B came up. Who wants to do UEFA B? You know, old pros, senior pros or whatever. And I thought, oh, you know what? Me, Graham Coughlin, who's now at Newport, he did it. I did it. Michael Jackson, who's at... where's Michael Jackson? He was manager of a team. Well, Burnley. Managed Burnley last year for a little bit. I think he's in around their first team now. So me, Michael Jackson, Coco, all done our UEFA B. And I've just completed my pro licence with Graham Coughlin, actually, now, not long ago, last year. So we've been on the same sort of path, same sort of journey. So no real thoughts of coaching. I just thought, yeah, I'll do it. Just make sure I've got it under my belt. And then I got the call from Dave Livermore to say, look, what are you doing? Because he knew I could play still. And I was frustrated. And I went and played in the conference. And it was too easy for me, really. But I was playing and coaching. So it was like, well, at least I'm transitioning while playing. So I was sort of taking the strikers and the attackers and playing, coaching, and developed from there, really.
What was that like? Obviously, you know, you're talking there about working with the attackers, working with the forwards. Something that's definitely become a lot more prominent in today's game is, you know, specialist coaching, position-specific coaching. Seems like you got there in a bit ahead of the curve before you even knew it.
I mean, it ain't even ahead of the curve. Let's be honest, right? Back in the day, before there was in possession, out of possession, you know, where before there was, individual specialist forward coaches or whatever you want to call them. Normally, you'd have a guy who played in the back and was a manager, and he would do all the defensive stuff. And he'd have a mate who was a coach who was an attacker, and he'd do the attacking stuff. And like, I was an attacker, I was a striker. So for me, what was natural was to coach the attacking players, you know, movements, how to get beyond, how to be clever, how to find space. So I think it's all been done. It's nothing new. It's just a different name. So I was doing that, and it was natural to me. It was easy to me. I enjoyed teaching the younger players. I enjoyed seeing them perform. And I suppose I just started getting that bug, and it was just that next. And to be honest with you, if it weren't for my dad saying, like, look, this is, you've been doing this for years. You've been playing all your life. You know, you've been a player. Now you've got your stuff, your badges. Why are you not just keep coaching? Because I was going to come out of it totally. I was like, no, I'm done with this. I'm done with the people in the game. I'm done with like liars. I'm done with cheaters. I'm done with people who care about themselves. I'm done with like, there's a lot of that in the game, and there still is. It's never going to go away. It's just how you deal with it and how you manage it. And I was close, you know. I started looking at other things. You know, I like a little bit of graphic design. Should I do? Can I go into that? Should I go uni and start doing something else? And I had all these things in my mind at the time. Should I go and help my dad do? He's got rental properties. Should I go and get into that and help him do his rental stuff, which I was doing anyway, like helping him out and stuff like that. So it weren't like it was the only thing I could do. I had options, and I was quite happy to start looking at other things. But if it weren't for my dad pushing me and saying, you know, this is what you know, you're good at it, do it, keep going, I would have come out of it a long time ago, I think. But, you know, and that's why, you know, when you talk about agents and you talk about stuff like that, well, what agent would do that? You know, who's gonna, no one's going to do that. Your dad, Your dad's your dad at the end of the day. He knows you better than anyone. You know, your family's your family. All right, he might not know the business, which he did know the business, but some people, some parents might not know the business. It's a different story. But if you've got someone who's like my dad, then, you know, it's a different story. But, yeah, so I carried on. And Bob's your uncle.
No, eventually, obviously, when you finally retired, you've obviously, you know, you've gone into management, gone into coaching. So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, what was your first, you know, proper role as a coach? Just a full, you know, full on.
So after I left Histon, I got the opportunity to go and play. I've been and played at Cheshunt, like around the corner. I was like, I'll play. It was like Ryman Prem or something like that. And I was playing, and then the manager got the sack. And they said, do you want to do it? So I started player manager. And I thought, I was still like, it was way too good to be playing there. I scored like 20 odd goals, I think, and set up 20 odd or whatever it was. And so I was player managing there at Cheshunt. And I ruptured my cruciate playing for Arsenal in a charity game. And so I couldn't play. I was out for a year. And so I was half. So that's when I was doing the job at Cheshunt as a full-time manager. So that was a real stint, really. And then I was just, from Cheshunt. So from 2013, I think it was, 2013 or 2014, I've been really coaching since that point.
And how would you describe yourself as a coach? Because obviously, like I said, we talked about it earlier, how things have changed so much in terms of the game and whatnot. But, and, you know, the traditional old school type of coach from England in particular, very much probably aggressive in their nature, very, you know, commanding. How would you describe your style?
I'd like to think that I'm fair. You know, I like to think that I'm fair and honest, definitely. I like to have that relationship with the players where it's not all about what I want. It's about what they can do and what they feel comfortable with. But at the same time, I've got a side to me that if something's not right and not good, they're going to know about it. So I'd like to have a little bit of, you know, yeah, I am commanding. I do command. I do demand quality and intensity. But at the same time, I like to think I'm a good man manager as well. You know, I take the time to learn about my players, their characters and attitudes. And I think I'm tactically very good.
Just to build on that, then obviously, where do you think all of that's come from? Because, you know, there's a lot of younger coaches coming through nowadays. A lot of people maybe haven't had a, you know, playing background. And you're seeing more and more of them coming through. Do you feel like there's always going to be that challenge that they're never going to be able to overcome?
What, coaches that haven't played?
Yeah.
You know what, I always say, I've always said the same thing like for the last 10 years, and that is, for a player who steps into coaching, if you think you're going to be a good coach because you've been a player, then you got it so wrong. You need to learn how to coach. And there is a lot of players like that. They think they've got a divine right to be a manager, or they think they've got a divine right to be a coach because they've played. And don't get me wrong, the experience of playing is second to none. They can't be replaced. And they do have that quality and that understanding because of that fact. You can never take that away from any player that goes into coaching. He's played the game. He's been involved in especially an elite player who's played professional level and higher. They've played and experienced so many things. They know every picture and every scenario that they're seeing on the pitch. It's whether they see it quick enough and whether they can act upon it is whether you're a good coach or not. So that's what I say to coaches who have played the game. For coaches who haven't played the game, I always say what they have to be good at is trying to be able to feel what that player is feeling in that game at that time. So whatever position it is on the pitch, coaches who have played are talking from experience most of the time because they've sensed it and seen it and felt it. Whereas coaches that haven't played it or have played it and maybe are not a level that where they would have experienced it that much, they're only talking off of what they've learned. So, but because they can't feel it, I don't know how else I can understand it, like explain it. But it's it's more textbook than theory, isn't it? What, say again?
It becomes more theory rather than practical.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they have to be able to get better at that. Ex-players have to get better at the other thing I spoke about, and non-players have to be better at the thing I just spoke about there, trying to feel it, trying to sense it, what it feels, and that's difficult. It's not easy, you know?
So just on that then, you know, what, you know, having been an ex-player yourself, what do you think the first, you know, obviously you talked there a little bit about what the coach maybe should have to do or maybe would need to do to really kind of have an impact and add some value there, but what's the general perception, do you think, from people that have played the game towards those coaches that haven't played the game? And maybe, you know, and especially in some cases, you know, where you've got coaches that might be maybe not only played the game, but sometimes even younger than the players.
Do you know what? I think, you know, if I look at from my own, I don't like to talk about others. If I look about it from my own point of view, if I see a coach who hasn't played the game, but shows good knowledge, good understanding, and understanding of the fact that he knows that an ex-player is with him, and that he understands the game really well, and they can respect that, then I think I got no issues with that. It's sometimes when you get coaches that haven't played the game, they come and they try to come with things that are like so far-fetched and so far away from the game that players that have played the game turn around and say, mate, what are you talking? You've never played the game. You can never understand that. But like that's why those sorts of conversations come up. That's why those sorts of things happen. So for me, I know many coaches who haven't played football who are very good. So I don't like distinguish between playing and non-playing. All I say is there's those little nuances that a non-playing coach has and a playing coach has. That's the differences. But they're the only things for me that a non-coach, why it might get someone's back up sometimes when they come in and they start doing things and saying things and acting a certain way around. Sometimes you get someone who's not been in the game long and you've got someone who's played 700-800 games and they're trying to tell them something and you're like, I'm not sure about that. Like, no, pick your battles with who you're going to pick them with and at the right times as well. And that's what I would say on that.
Definitely. So let's look at your role now. Obviously, you know, you've gone from the under-23s at Watford. What does that look like on a day-to-day? You know, how much has that changed from what you were maybe exposed to when you was a young player coming through? Does that, you know, what does that look like? You know, there's probably a lot of coaches listening to this that have got some experience working in the academy game themselves. They might have some insights, but there's also going to be a lot that maybe have no experience working in the academy game. And therefore thinking, right, well, what does it look like to become an under-23 coach at a championship club?
So I'll tell you what my last 4 years was. I've been Watford 23's lead coach. And I've been England under-17's assistant coach. So I was coming in every day at Watford doing my normal job, Monday to Friday, Monday to Saturday, whatever the schedule needed, depending on where our games were, which flitters and flatters from week to week, because we either play on a Monday or we play on a Friday, which changes our schedule totally. Obviously, you've got match day -1, -2, and or +1, +2, depending on where your game sits, depends on what numbers you can do day to day. So if we've got a game, let's say I've got a game on Friday, tomorrow we're going to be training an hour and we're going to be maybe 3K, so 3,000 metres, zero high or 100 high speed running max, and light stuff. Now, yesterday was a big day. Yesterday was, we covered 8-9K, I think yesterday, probably overdone it a little bit. Players covered 8-9K and covered about 600-800 high speed running. So they had a big day. And the day before that was a little bit less. So, yeah, so we're guided by what our numbers are off our S&C coaches. We talk about it and we say, can we hit them a little bit here or can we go a little bit more there or so and so forth. And so that would be a normal week for me at Watford. And then alongside that, there was the camps. So we'd have our camps every 2 or 3 months. I'd be into camp. I'd be into meetings where we'd be prepping for a camp. So that would be maybe a month before. You'd be prepping and you'd get yourself ready for the camp. So you're not doing, whereas in full-time football at Watford, we'd be doing, I'm prepping like every day the day before. for the next day. It might change here and there. In the England camps, you're prepping like 2 months in advance, so there's no prep work when you're on camp. It's all to a T. It's bam, 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 bam. Those 3 or 4 or 5 days, 10 days, and then you know exactly what you're doing. Whereas the day-to-day stuff at Watford is a little bit different. It could change. They might take 2-3 first team into the first team tomorrow. I'm prepping. I've got all my numbers down now, ready for training tomorrow because we're prepping for Friday. They take 2 or 3 players off me. And now I'm bringing 18s up who haven't played yet. And they haven't done the work that I've done yesterday and Monday. So now I have to go back to the office, get the clips up of training, show them a few vital clips that we've worked on the press, whether it's pressing from inside or outside or whatever it might have been. I've got to go through that again for those players who've not really practiced it, but now they're doing it in theory. And hopefully they take it on board. That's when you see the real learners, I suppose. So yeah, there's lots of variance in our day to day at the club. Whereas with England, I suppose it's like I said, it's prepped. You know what players you've got. You know they were there with you on camp no matter what, unless they get injured. Touch wood, they don't, or they're being regulated because they've come off of a game or something from their club.
Definitely, and obviously, as you're now progressing up towards the top end of the PDP, would you say that in the club environment, it's a lot more reactionary and responsive in terms of what the fixture schedule is showing? As we see at 9 through to 16s, is very much a syllabus, a curriculum, maybe not as structured and, maybe not as free and as flexible as it might be at the top end. And how does that then look, obviously, going into the national team camps? You know, how do you decide on what you are, what you're not going to work on, what's relevant, what's not relevant?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Again, I think when you're at 23s level, there is a curriculum. We still follow a curriculum, but it's only we'll filter things in when we need to. We're coming off of games. We're coming off of what we're trying to get players to become, to get them in the first team. So there's a slight difference there in what we're allowed to do or what we need to do to push those players onto the next level. With England, we like it was Justin Cochran was the lead coach, and it was me and TC, Tom Curtis, who was assisting, and we would sit down and talk about a plan, talk about how we wanted to play. Obviously, within the DNA of England and how we play, which is high possession, high press, high possession, building from the back to create a finish. Obviously, within that remit, we were able to create our plans off of the opposition that we were playing against. But we would study the opposition, would watch the opposition because we had time to do it. So we would know before we go into a tournament, we'd have 3 teams we're playing in our group or whatever, what system they play, how they play it, and what we were going to do against them. So a lot more structured there because you're allowed to be. Whereas with Watford, you've got to be a little bit looser with your delivery and how you deliver and things that might change because things change daily, not daily, minutely. So, yeah, I suppose that's good for your learning, your development.
Just looking at that, then what would you say some of the biggest, what would you say some of the most useful takeaways have been for you throughout your coaching journey so far? So if you were going back to the start of that journey now, and it was maybe 1, 2, maybe 3 key messages for yourself, what would be the ones that you give yourself?
I think if you've got the confidence and the belief in what you're doing. Don't be scared to think that you can't change it. Like I've throughout my coaching, I love playing football. I love high possession. I love having the ball. I love my team having the ball. I love playing with control. And I love being able to build and play through the thirds and provoke the opposition onto me or onto us. But along the way, things have changed slightly. And, you've got to understand the game. You've got to understand it and you've got to, you've got to change how you've got to adapt. And I think, so don't be scared. Don't think you're failing because you're adapting. That'd be the first thing for me. Because there's a difference between thinking you're failing and adapting. Adapting is probably cleverer than being stubborn. Do you understand what I'm saying with that?
Just recognizing that, just because you had a plan coming into this doesn't mean you have to stick to that.
Yeah.
It's probably being more attentive to recognizing actually this plan isn't going to fit what we needed to do anymore.
Yeah.
Can we, you know, can we be flexible with that, rather than being stubborn, if you like.
Yeah. And sometimes what people say make you stubborn as well, you know. And I think you've got to try to come away from that and say, you know what, he's got a point. Like, if people, you want to have people around you who, the other thing would be, I want to have people around me that question me about what I'm doing. I might not like it. In fact, I don't like it. But at the same time, I've been able to adapt to dealing with it and say, well, okay, he's got a point. If he thinks that, then that's fine. That's his opinion. I still might try it, but I'll have it in my mind what he said, so that, you know, you can learn from it. That'd be the other thing. And the other thing would be, you just never stop learning. I mean, my learning and development at England over the last 4 years has just been like, was brilliant. Like, the insights that I got, the understanding, the game understanding, the breakdown of the game in respect of how I can deliver it. In smaller clusters, in smaller areas, rather than thinking you have to deliver the whole game.
Yeah, so you're talking about that attention to detail, yeah?
Yeah, attention to detail and creating practices that allow you to practice what you want, you know, specifically. That for me, I think I've become really good at that. I've got practices that I've got now that will let me work on the build, will let me work on the press without having to worry about the next part. You know, everything's about a part. Work that part, because you can still work that part and get this part out. You can work on this part after, but get that part that you want out by creating the practice that allows you to do that, you know, or practice within a practice. So I'm practicing the build, which is the main element of my practice, but I'm still creating the next part, which allows us to be able to work on the next bit. So, they'll be the three things really that I would, that I take away with me, or, you know.
Just on that final point, obviously, you made reference to your time at England and some, you know, the little things that you've picked up along the way there. What will be some of the challenges that you might face in terms of obviously working with these players on a national team camp that are coming in from a club who might be very different to how you guys want to coach these players? And at what point do you say, right, okay, we're gonna bleed this in, but also recognize that this is what you're bringing with you from your club environment? How much effort and how much time is taken to go and recognize what's actually happening behind those closed doors as well? Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had that with a player called Jamie Bynoe-Gittins. You know, he's playing in, he's at Dortmund now. He moved from Man City. Excellent winger. Like, just so like focused on, you know, going, getting at people, directness. But that's what he was. He was a winger who just wanted to be wide, you know. And we managed to tweak it a little bit. But at the same time, what we did is we said, this is him, you know, this is his qualities. So you might have to tweak your system in order to work around the player. So if we were playing a 4-3-3, on the right side, we might have had somebody like, who did we have? We had, I think we had Dane Scarlett down the middle. We had Jamie Bynoe-Gittins on the left. And on the right, we had Amari Forsan, Man United. And he would come in the pocket. So we could, our practice allowed us to say, right, on this side, you know, your fullback will be low because Jamie Bynoe-Gittins is not going to roll inside because he's a winger. He'll stay wide. On that side, we can have our fullback who can go and bomb on and create the fifth player on that right side because Amari comes inside. So I think it's more about, again, solutions around systems rather than solutions around trying to change a player, you know?
In doing that, do you find that with the struggle there, do you feel like there is a kind of struggle there around what the player is trying to do at their club and bringing that to obviously the national team setup? And I guess understanding that, yeah, that might be, you know, in that case, you've said that you've kind of just gone with what his strength is and slotted that in. But at what point do you guys say as a do you maybe address it and say, well, yeah, that's his strength, but it doesn't actually fit with what we want to do?
Yeah, I mean,
the best players in.
I mean, obviously at the younger ages, we're bringing those players in because they've got certain qualities, because we're looking to push them into the senior team. So if you know you've got a player who's good at that, you'll push him into, eventually he'll get to the senior team because he's good at that quality, and Gareth Southgate will select him because he's got that quality. It's like at the minute, you've got Grealish, who can come in the pockets, drop low, get on the turn and get front facing. You've got Rashford on the left side, who will stay on shoulders and get beyond, won't he? So you've got two players you'll bring into that squad for that reason. So, you know, you can change it up. With us, yes, we can afford to say, OK, look, we're bringing them in. They've got these qualities. Yes, we want to try and play a certain way. And we'll get them to try and play. And we'll teach them because we're still educating the players. But when you get one that just, you know, you're not going to get anything else out of him, you either say, right, we're not going to select him again, or you adapt to help him. Otherwise, he's not having a good... Because I think England now is... a certain element of England is like, they have to come on and enjoy themselves as well, you know? Whereas before it was, you're coming here, which I still think I sort of struggled with that a little bit, is that, you know, you're playing for England. You've been called up for England. That's an honour. You know, respect it. Work hard. Honour the badge. Honour your coaches and, you know, give it everything you got. Now it's sort of, come in, enjoy yourself. Make sure you feel happy so you don't go somewhere else. You know, these are sort of things you're dealing with in that respect as well. But again, everything's balanced. Everything's making sure that they're learning. I think that's the main thing.
No, definitely. It's definitely a consideration because you're starting to see some of these young English players, you know, maybe playing for some of their home countries and their parents' countries and things like that. So definitely a consideration to make. So have you had to deal with any situation like that where you've had to maybe persuade a player to stay with England as opposed to not?
I wouldn't, personally. I just wouldn't. That just goes against everything I believe in. I know we've had that. We have had that situation or situations where you're sort of like on tender hooks because you're thinking, oh, he could go and play for that country or that country, like as a country I'm talking about. But I'm totally against that. I think if you want to play for your country, then you want to play for your country because you love your country. As simple as that. And you'll do everything you can to do that. And there's no like, oh, you treat me better, I'm going there. You treat me better, I'm going there. That's how I am. I'm probably too old school when it comes to that because you would end up losing players. But at the same time, I would have cut my left leg off to play for England, you know? So, you know.
I'm not sure you would have got a game after that, though.
What's that?
I'm not sure you would have got a game after that.
Well, no, maybe, nah, maybe not for the, nah, yeah. Yeah.
No, I get what you mean, though. I think it definitely has changed in the younger generation now definitely have a different mindset to what it was maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago.
100%.
Even playing for your country or even just becoming a professional footballer as a whole, I think nowadays it almost is, well, I'm 18, I'm a scholar, I've made it. So
yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah.
The grass, you know, the grass ain't that green all the time. So something to consider, definitely. Omar, you know, I'm conscious of time and obviously you've given us a lot of insights around your journey. And I guess I'm really curious now. And obviously, you know, you've gone back through a lot of your playing journey. You've talked a little bit about your coaching journey. If there was anyone listening to this now thinking, right, what can I take away from this conversation from Omar and something that I can implement straight away, what would that be?
In coaching terms, yeah?
Yeah, whether they're a new coach, whether they're a coach just starting their journey, or whether this, you know, they're a few years into that journey and just thinking, right, this is a consideration I haven't made before. What could that be?
I don't know if they wouldn't have considered it before, but I think preparation is key to everything. Prepare properly. If you prepare properly, you give yourself half a chance to get things right and enjoy yourself, you know, when you get out on the grass rather than... Like, I remember I used to get so nervous when I used to go out on the grass, really nervous. Like, it was terrible, terrible nerves. Like, am I going to get it right? Am I going to get the things that I want out? Am I going to be able to do it? I'm thinking, wow, what was that all about? But I suppose that comes with experience as well. So, yeah, prepare. Prepare best you can for whatever you want to do. That would be my advice.
Watford under 23s now. Where next?
You know what, I love it at Watford at the minute. I've been there 5 years now, and I've just last year I got my pro license. I've worked in England over the last 4 years, which I really loved as well. I only come away from England because I was just getting too tired. I was doing 4 years of camps and full-time football at Watford every day, like every year. It was like really difficult, like that balance between, you know, there isn't much balance, to be fair, with when they say family and football. It's, you know, usually football, and family is special time when you get it. And that's how you, if you want to get to the top, I think you do have to seriously think that way. What's next for me? I would say, you know, if an opportunity come up for me around the first team at Watford, I would so love to step into the environment now. I'm ready to do it. I've been knocking on the door now for a while. I'm confident to do it, and I feel I deserve to do it if it does come about. If not, then definitely I think senior football will be something that I'm definitely, you know, I've had a taste of it at Orient already when I was first team manager there. You know, I want it again. I want competitive football. I love what I do with the 21s, 23s. It does give me satisfaction seeing the boys progressing and all the boys that have progressed over the years. But now it'd be nice to try and take some of those boys that have progressed and have them in a first team somewhere, you know. That's for me now the progression, you know, whether it's at home or abroad, preferably at Watford. But if not, then, you know, progression has to be where your whistle takes you.
Maybe one day we'll see you in the Premier League as a manager.
Hope so, mate. Hope so. That's what I'm trying to do.
Hopefully you don't cut enough your left leg to do that as well.
No.
Omar, no, massive thank you for your time today, and I really appreciate it.
No, sure, thank you, mate.
Great insights for everyone that's listening into this as well.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. No, really, really good, mate. I'll listen on a few of the podcasts as well. It's really good.
Amazing. Thank you for your
time. Cheers, Atif, mate. Top man. Take care.
There you have it, guys, another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.